Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. I'm in for Neil this week. We're just so grateful for you to join us here this afternoon. I'm also very happy because we get to talk about friendship today. You know, we all long for that deep and lasting friendship, but sometimes friendships, especially for women, can be a little bit challenging to make friends and sometimes difficult to keep them as well. And sometimes friendship can just be messy. Well, my guest for today believes that there is a vision for friendship that allows for the messiness of our lives and for the realities of our schedules. And we are going to learn how to purposely invest in these relationships that God has given us. Let me tell you a little bit about my guest for today and her book, Messy, Beautiful Friendship. My guest for today is Christine Hoover. She's a pastor's wife, a mom, a speaker. She's an author of a couple different books, From Good to Grace and The Church Planting Wife. She's also written for the Gospel Coalition, Desiring God, and Christianity Today. She blogs at gracecoversme.com and enjoys helping women apply their gift of God's grace in their daily lives. She lives in Virginia with her family. Welcome to the show, Christine.
Thanks so much for having me, Joe. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I love the title of that book because it just seems that in the context of my entire life, that there's always been a little bit of an angst with friendships, especially with women. As a young girl, as an older mom, as a woman well into adulthood, there seems to be this, I love my friends, ooh, I'm not sure I like my friends thing that goes on. And it seems like that is universal. Have you found that to be true?
Absolutely, I have. And actually, I think sometimes it's more of, I'm not sure that I have good friends, you know, that we cross over to some invisible line into adulthood where we think, wow, friendship is not as easy as it used to be. At least for most people, friendship in childhood and teenage years is pretty easy. But then in adulthood, it's really hard to make friends. It's hard to have time for friends. And then we kind of get into some pretty messy parts of life. So it's hard sometimes to navigate friendship and to know how to respond when it gets hard.
That's so true. And I don't know when exactly that changes. I do remember maybe as an elementary school child or maybe even younger than that, being able to walk up to anyone and they would be your friends. Or you might even say, yes, do you want to be friends? And it would be that easy. But that doesn't necessarily happen when you're in your 20s, 30s, and 40s.
Mm-mm. I mean, that's what I experienced. When I became an adult, I got married, I started having children. One of my children has special needs. I was going through a lot in my 20s and early 30s. But I really didn't feel like I had a friend to my name. And I look back at that time and I just think, what changed? I think that what happened for me and what happens for a lot of women is that friendship becomes difficult and we begin to think that somehow we are to blame for that, that something's wrong with us, that we've lost the sense of how to be a friend. Or sometimes we blame other women. We're surrounded by women, but we think, why aren't they inviting us to this? Or why aren't they coming toward us with friendship? And so there can be a lot of angst, and that's what happened for me. I remember kind of wondering what has happened, and that it was all kind of an internal thought process. I didn't talk about friendship with anyone. For some reason, we don't talk about friendship very often. And so I thought, well, I'm the only one struggling with this. Mm-hmm. And then I became a pastor's wife, and I started talking to other women where they were coming to me with their greatest struggles. And often it centered around their relationships with other women. And so I discovered that this is a really common struggle that we kind of cross over into adulthood and we trade kind of this immature version of friendship that it's just going to happen to us like it did in childhood. But we trade that in for another immature version, which is that there's going to be this perfect friendship out there. If we could just find it, then we'll be satisfied. So we're looking for that unattainable
There is this romanticized view of friendship that you talk about in the book. And I feel like some women have talked about that as well, that they're going to find this perfect person who fits into not only the needs that they have, but what they have to give as well, that there is this person out there. And you haven't found that to be true, correct? Because I certainly haven't as well.
I don't think anyone has found it to be true, but for some reason we do have this idea that there is this person out there that can complete us. You use the word romanticized idea. I think that it is a romanticized idea, kind of like marriage. If we're married, we know as soon as we get married, it's not this romantic ideal, but for some reason we hold on to that with friendship longer, thinking that if we just find that person that gets us, that kind of fits the box of what we think that friend is going to look like, that we'll have that, what I call a wish dream. We'll have that wish dream fulfilled and then we'll be happy. But none of us, we don't find it, because that's not how God intends friendship to be. There's not a perfect person that's going to meet those needs for us. That's what Christ Jesus is for. That's what he does. That's his role. And so I think when we hold on to these ideals, we kind of hold these standards over real women in our lives who are imperfect just as we are. And so God is, for me, I look back at my 20s, my 30s, and I think God was trying to give me friends, but they were imperfect people. And we had imperfect conversation. And we had sometimes difficulty relating on everything. And so I would just discount those friendships. I would dismiss those people as potential friends, when in fact, those were the very gifts that God was trying to give me.
Well, in your book, Messy, Beautiful Friendship, you do write that friendship does begin and it ends with God. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. I think friendship begins with God because he created it. And he actually engaged friendship with Adam and Eve first, right? So he walked with them in the garden. He created them for his companionship and for their companionship with him. And then, of course, we know that they marred that friendship with their sin, and there was this disconnect between man and God. And thinking about that, we think God extended friendship even further to us then, that he made a way for us to be restored to him through Christ. And so friendship is his idea, and this idea of community and companionship is something that he designed for us. And when I say it begins with him and ends with him, what I mean is that true friendship between two imperfect people is always going to point us back to him. It's a friend, you know, I think about my friends in my own life, and what they do is they remind me of my hope in him. They remind me to turn my gaze toward him. They help me to enjoy God because I enjoy them and I see them as gifts from him, and it points my heart back to him. And so it's kind of this circle, beginning with God. He modeled for us. He instituted friendship, and then this friendship points us back to him in worship.
Oh, it's just so well said. Do you think that there are some experiences that women seem to have in common as it applies to friendship? Here as a pastor's wife, I'm sure you have a lot of great conversations with women who might be struggling in this area or celebrating in this area. What do you find to be some commonality?
Well, I absolutely love that I do kind of get a big picture from women, because I hear from a lot of different women in different life stages as I'm meeting with them or talking with them as I have opportunity, that they're telling me that this is a struggle for them, that we do have this struggle in common to know how to navigate relationships well, that we deal with insecurities. We all deal with insecurities in our relationships. And I do find that we do have that in common. But I also find that I see in the big picture, I see certain women who are really successful in relationships, and I see what they have in common. And what I find that they have in common is that they are seekers of other people, that they're going into rooms, or they're going into conversations, or they're going into let's say a women's retreat, or they're going into church and they're thinking about how can I go toward other people, whether it's with questions or, you know, some way of trying to know other people. They're going beyond the age boundaries that we often put on ourselves, or, you know, we kind of put these little restrictions on who we could potentially be friends with, as far as age or life stage or marital status or all this kind of things. And so I see women going toward other women and trying to engage them and show value to them. I see what they have in common is that they really are a magnet for other women. So I see that we have opportunities. If we can kind of think in that same manner, we have opportunities for friendship.
Well, I loved that chapter you wrote that has to do with being a friendship magnet. We have to take a quick break, but I'd love to talk about that when we return, of what is the responsibility of the friendship magnet? And then maybe what's the responsibility of the person who doesn't feel like a magnet? How can they engage and jump in so that this maintaining and acquiring friendships is for both? We're going to talk with Christine Hoover when we come back on her book, Messy, Beautiful Friendship, Finding and Nurturing Deep and Lasting Relationships. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
I'll be by your side wherever you fall, in the dead of night, whenever you call, and please don't fight.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm grateful to have you here listening today. I'm Joe Bender, and just pleased to be talking to author Christine Hoover today. She's a pastor's wife, a mom, she's a speaker, and the author of a beautiful new book called Messy, Beautiful Friendship, Finding and Nurturing Deep and Lasting Relationships. And hey, if you're listening today and you'd like to get your hands on one of these books, well, both Christine and her publisher, Baker Books, have donated a few for us to give away. We'd love to get that in your hands. You can give us a call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. And Carissa will get your name on a list for that. Well, Christine, we were just chatting a little bit before the break about this being a friendship magnet. And some people do seem to have that gift of being able to draw people into them. But other people, I would include myself and the other people, aren't necessarily that. And maybe we'd love to be drawn to someone. I love this story that you wrote from a friend of yours in your book about being at the first day of Bible study and just feeling a little bit lonely and isolated. She was new to the town, and how much she was just hoping someone would kind of make her feel welcome. Ironically, I just had that situation happen last week as I was brand new to a new congregation, a new city, and was hoping the same thing, and so grateful to the women who were kind of picked me out and made sure that I felt welcome. But that doesn't always happen, does it, Christine?
No, unfortunately it doesn't. And I've been the new person too. It's really hard to be the new person, and you realize how you feel, how awkward it can be, and you're just wanting that one person, just a hello, or, you know, an invitation to sit with them. It means so much, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Someone came down when I finally got to the sanctuary. I sat by myself, and I don't know, I was just thinking, I wasn't sure what to expect. And sure enough, someone came and sat right next to me and started just asking questions. And I thought, oh, I wish I could be a friend like that. I should try to be that person the next time I'm in that same situation. But this time I just received the benefit of it.
Yes. And I think that we can learn from that, because I imagine if we've been on the receiving end of that, we kind of think, oh, that must be a person who's really outgoing or really confident. But the truth is that she probably felt awkward. She probably thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe that person will feel so awkward, and I don't know if she'll receive it very well. But she pushed through that, and she came and sat by you. And I think that's what we need to know, is that we don't have to have an extroverted personality or certain personality characteristic at all. We just have to be willing to be a little bit uncomfortable and put somebody else's comfort above our own, to know that it's going to matter to that person. Even if they're shy and they don't know what to say, even if it's a little uncomfortable, it means something to them. It makes them feel valued and accepted. And I think that's the first step toward toward friendship for anybody. And so we can all do that. We just have to be willing to be uncomfortable a little bit.
Mm. Well, and you do write in that chapter that you titled Friend Magnet, that it's really important to honor all and be deep friends with some. What do you mean by that?
I think that we, especially nowadays with social media, we are connected to so many people. And some of them we don't even really know, right? But it gives us this sense that we should be able to be friends with a whole lot of people, that we should know everybody within our church congregation. We should know all of our neighbors and that. But really, we can't do that. We can't have deep connections with that many people. And so I think the way that I like to think about it, especially as a pastor's wife, when I go into church situations and I'm interacting with people, I tend to know a lot of people, a few things about them, but I want to honor all of them, and I want to show value to them by asking them questions and listening to them. But I also know that I cannot be deep friends with everyone, and that's okay. And so am I really making sure I'm spending time with the few really deep friendships where are they really know what's going on with me and I know what's going on with them?
You know, one of the chapters I was writing about that was what talking about, you just said, being known to them, is that sometimes we get a little confused on what it means to be known, and that sometimes we think we're just supposed to talk about ourselves so that someone can know us. But you write that it's really more about asking questions and getting to know someone and then having them ask questions about you. Can you talk a little bit more about that process and how we can help to know other people and also in that respect be known to them?
Yes, I do think this is one of the keys for us. It's something very practical that we can do to make friends, but also deepen friendships beyond kind of the factual, you know, I know a few things about you, I'm your acquaintance. And that skill is asking good questions and listening well. I think we think what you said, you know, if we just start talking, we tell stories about ourselves that will be known. And I think that's somewhat true. But I think we can initiate a deeper relationship with someone else by asking pointed questions. And I don't mean being a busybody and just trying to gather information. I mean just trying to know them more as a person and what their maybe more innermost thoughts are. So what I mean by that is, and I give this example in the book, is using the question, tell me more. Would you tell me more about what it is like to do your job? What do you like about your job? Tell me more about what it's like to homeschool if you don't homeschool. You know, I ask that to homeschooling moms because I don't know how they do it. But it enables me to kind of know more of them on a heart level of what their interests are and what their concerns are. And often that comes back to me where when I'm taking the relationship past the factual stage and I'm trying to show honor and value and understanding to them, it really is, that's what we're trying to do is build understanding, because understanding leads to compassion and connection. And hopefully that will be returned to me and I can share as well. But we're making that kind of emotional connection, and that really is what takes relationships deeper.
Well, and sometimes it seems like we're so crazy busy or trying to slam in a coffee here and there that those conversations are so few and far between. What are some great ways for us to make the most out of that maybe shortened time that we have with an individual that we're trying to get to know?
Mm-hmm. Well, first I would say that we want to really think through who are those people that we want to spend our time getting together with, because we do have a limited amount of time. And so a lot of times I really have to think through, God, who are the people that are those life-giving friends to me? And it's not always necessarily a friend, but it may be somebody that I want to invest my life in. They're younger than me and I want to help them along, or they're older than me and I really want to be able to learn from them. And so who are those people? And I actually write those names down and because I want to remember so that I can steward my time well and make sure I'm initiating with those people. so that when we sit down over coffee and we do have a limited amount of time, I've already kind of thought through what are some things that I really want to make sure I follow up with them about or I ask them about. If it's a mentor type person, I have questions in mind that I really want to ask them and I want to know more of their story. So I think just thinking ahead before you even see that person, what would God have you talk about? What is something that you want to know more, that they've kind of broached the subject that you want to know more about? What are maybe even some concerns and cares that you're carrying that you need to share with a friend and ask for prayer? Those kind of things, knowing you want to get to those in a conversation, will help take it past just, just the surface conversation.
How about expectations of what we are thinking and hoping that this friendship is going to be? And sometimes those don't get met. How can our expectations get in the way of making and deepening those friendships?
I think we have to know in advance that we do have the expectations. And I talked previously about the wish dream. That is something that's so important for us to know. And that term actually comes from Dietrich Bonhoeffer's book, Life Together. And he says basically that we as Christians often enter into the community looking for community, and we have this ideal picture of what it should look like. And so then when it doesn't meet that, we get really disappointed, and sometimes we even just kind of give up. And so I think recognizing what are my expectations? What is my wish dream of what it should be? For me, mine is often that other women or my friends are not going to make decisions that are going to change our ability to get together or to see each other, or things that will make us kind of, it will be harder. It'll be harder for us to be friends. Mm-hmm. And for me to know that and to recognize that means that I'm really aware and I can release my friends from that. So that, let's say if my friend whose kids go to the same school as mine says, oh, we're leaving, we're going to a different school, I'm not going to be disappointed, but I'm not going to be disappointed, but I can celebrate that for her, that she has prayed about that she knows that the Lord is leading their family to do that. And I can celebrate that rather than be disappointed in how it's affecting me. Hmm. And then we can talk about how can we make sure we still see each other? This is important. You know, you're important to me, and I want to make sure that we still see each other. But I just think it starts with knowing what our expectations are. And sometimes we don't know that there are expectations until they're not met. But I think we need to be ready for, okay, when my expectation isn't met, how am I going to respond to that? Hmm. Am I expecting perfection from this person? Am I expecting that they're going to always respond to me with the exact right words or the exact right responses? Then, you know, I can't go into friendship like that. That's going to destroy the friendship eventually. I want to be prepared to overlook offenses if they are overlookable offenses. I want to be prepared to say, hey, what you said hurt my feelings, or I need to be prepared to ask for forgiveness from a friend that I hurt. And just letting the imperfection be, I think, is one of the things that we have to do in order to have enduring friendship, because we are going to be disappointed. These are people. They're going to disappoint us, and we're going to disappoint them.
Oh, such a great attitude to have. And sometimes I think about that attitude that I should have after I've not had that attitude. But I love that it's out there and that there's something to aspire to. Well, I'm talking to Christine Hoover today. She's written just a poignant book called Messy, Beautiful Friendship, Finding and Nurturing Deep and Lasting Relationships. We do have a couple of copies to give us away. Give us a call, 877-933-2484. I feel like I'm at camp, Ted. Thank you. Thank you for that one. I just envision me sitting in an audience where people are singing a song and asking us to stand up and cheer, right?
Yeah, that's kind of got that vibe to it, Jeff Moore.
Very nice. Well, we're talking about friendship today, and that's kind of what that song was about, that we want people to know how much we care for them and that we're just emulating this love that Christ has put in our heart for other people. I'm talking to Christine Hoover today and her book, Messy, Beautiful Friendship. Talking about how friendship can be a little bit messy, Christine, you wrote a story about how you'd been hurt by someone and also just how maybe you had hurt someone. Can you share something about how that changes you or how that aches your heart once you know that you're in a situation where you need to have that conversation with a friend that might be difficult?
Oh, yes, that's super hard. I did write a chapter in the book with my neighbor. She used to be my neighbor. She moved away, actually, but we lived across the street from each other for about 6 years. And in that time, we had a lot of difficulty understanding each other, relating to each other. We are really different, and it definitely came to the surface, and we just had a lot of trouble. And through that relationship, I learned so much about friendship. I learned about myself that I am really quick to want to run away from conflict and from, you know, anything that it just pokes at my sensitive spots. And through her and through our relationship deteriorated completely. And we had to have a conversation about that. And God really used that conversation in both of our lives, definitely in mine. And it was enabled us to restore our friendship, but also to talk about that one of the reasons that really God had placed us across the street from each other was to learn from one another. And we were so different, and we needed to learn from each other's differences and not make assumptions about one another, not make assumptions about what the other thought of us. And so one of the things I learned through her was that God puts people in our life for friendship that doesn't always feel really natural, but can be for our growth. And after that, really resolved to learn from the people around me, not run away from things that made me feel uncomfortable, be willing to say I'm sorry, to realize that I hurt people, and it's not just them hurting me, but I too hurt people, and I want to learn from that. I want to grow from that. So she really taught me a lot about that, just being willing to receive hard things, to say hard things sometimes, and to receive those as faithful wounds of a friend, because she was a friend. She wasn't someone that was not a faithful friend. She was faithful to me. And so I learned so much from that.
And you do write a chapter on speaking into someone's life, maybe if something needs to be corrected, or maybe that's your job this time to be able to say something that might help another person to grow. But we have to earn that right, don't we, before we can speak into someone's life like that?
Definitely, definitely. I think that's a very sensitive thing. I don't think we should be often going to other people and saying words of correction, or just when I say correction, I mean, hey, I see something in your life and I'm concerned for you and I love you and I want the best for you and I don't think this is it. And I think that should happen very rarely, and it should be something that we don't like. If we like it, we're probably doing it wrong. But I do think that there are times where the Lord has made it very clear to me that I am the person that needs to say it. Sometimes we notice things, or we have concerns. There's our little discernment flag is going up concerning a good friend of ours. And sometimes I think, you know, I'm not the person, but I will definitely pray and ask God, am I the person that needs to say something? And if so, I will trust you to tell me when that's right, when the right timing is, and what the words need to be, and to go with the right spirit of restoration and love and not just being right. And so I think it should happen very rarely, but there are times where God has nudged me that I am the person, and I have had to go to friends and say I'm really concerned. Sometimes that has not gone well. And I think that's the risk we take in obeying God, is we're putting the friendship on the altar and saying, God, I'm willing to obey you and to honor you, even if that means that the person misunderstands me or my motivations for doing it. But I kind of go in the book just into some very specifics about how we can do that in a way that kind of Galatians 6:1 says that we restore each other with gentleness and love, and how can we do that?
It seems like it's a difficult dance that is impossible without guidance from the Holy Spirit.
Yes, for sure. And that has to be how we enter in those things, or else it becomes kind of a self-oriented motivation. For me, a lot of times I just want to be right. You know, I want to say, I see these things and I know what's right, instead of the motivation being love and wanting their best. I'm kind of thinking more about myself. So I have to give it time. I have to really give it prayer and time, making sure that I'm doing the right thing.
What about if a friendship does go bad, or maybe it's lost completely? What advice do you have for that person? Is there a point where we should work on repairing, or is there ever a point where maybe we need to walk away?
I think there are a lot of different ways that this can happen, where we lose a relationship. Sometimes a friendship drifts and we don't know really why it's drifting away, not sure if we did something. Sometimes there has been conflict and we know why the friendship has dissolved. I think that we have to do what Scripture says, is to live at peace with everyone as long as it depends on us. Mm-hmm. And so I think if a friendship has drifted, a lot of times I would encourage women to have a conversation if they feel that maybe they've done something but they don't know what it is, to initiate that conversation. That can be really challenging. Sometimes it can be challenging because we may hear things we don't want to hear, or we may just find that person really just didn't see us as a good friend as much as we thought. But I am all for the direct, put things on the table kind of conversations, because otherwise we fill in those gaps with our own imagination of what happened, or did we do something where we're blaming ourselves, or we get angry at that other person. But I do think there are times where the relationships it's okay for them to be different, to change. And my response to that is, for women who are experiencing that, is to grieve that. That's a grief. It is a grief when a relationship has dissolved. It's a grief when we've been hurt. And I've had those experiences. And what has helped me so much is to know that God sees all. And if someone has wounded me, He sees that. He saw it. And so it's okay to acknowledge that that hurts, and to grieve it before Him, and to know that He grieves when we have been wounded. But at the same time, He sees our hearts too. And so one of the things for me is, I've gotten really bitter at people that have wounded me. And I always use the word cherished, because that's kind of what it was. I kind of cherished that wound, and I would rethink about it, and I would reopen it. And I became bitter toward them. And when I realized that God sees what happened, I realized He sees my heart too. And so I need to be rooting out that bitterness and be grieving, yes, but grieving before Him and letting Him tend that wound to where the roots of bitterness don't come in.
Well, and to remember, I mean, you write just so eloquently about how God did not create us to live in isolation, and that it's important to be reaching out for these friendships and allowing Him to lead us into maybe new friendships if one has possibly died.
Yes, because the Bible, you said it, the Bible says that those who live in isolation, it says, woe to those, you know, in Ecclesiastes 4, it says, woe to those who fall down and have no one to pick them up. It's dangerous for us to be isolated, because friendship is for our good. It's for our benefit. And it is imperfect. It is not, there are going to be times where we are hurt, but we want to grieve those hurts so that we can get back up and reengage with other women, and not kind of close ourselves off thinking, well, I don't want to be hurt again. God gives us an avenue to deal with our hurt, and that is to go to Him and let Him minister to us and care for us. And sometimes it's to go to that person who's hurt us and to tell them and to give them an opportunity. They may not even know that they hurt us, and give them an opportunity to say they're sorry.
Well, you know, Christine, you have so much great information available in your book. I feel like we could talk for another hour, but unfortunately we have like 2 minutes left. Would you ever pray for those women who are listening today who are having a hard time finding and nurturing relationships regardless of their age or stage in life?
Sure, sure. Father, I thank you for friendship. I thank you that you give that gift, even though it is through imperfect people. I pray for the women who are hurting, who feel isolated, who feel alone. I pray that you would minister to them first and foremost. Let them find in you a deep and true friend. Let their souls find rest in you, Lord. And I pray that you would minister to the wounds that they have, that you would care for them as a good doctor would care for our physical wounds. And Lord, I pray that you would give them their next step after that they have known your friendship. I pray that you would give them just one person to seek, to spend time with, to maybe even share some of the cares and concerns that they have. Lord, help them to continue to reengage and to connect with other women, because we know that friendship is a gift that you want to give us. We thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Well, Christine Hoover, thanks so much, not only for writing this beautiful book, but just for praying for those who are searching for deep and lasting friendships as well. You can find out more about Christine Hoover on her, where she blogs, at gracecoversme.com. We'll have a link to that on our website as well at myfaithradio.com on Connecting Faith. Christine, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
You bet. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
Thank you for tuning in to Connecting Faith. We enjoyed the conversation with Joe Bender here just a few minutes ago. And we have the privilege of connecting with Lisa Marone every other Monday. She provides a Monday morning health tip online, which you can sign up for at lisamarone.com and read her great updates and encouragements. But today we get a chance to talk with Lisa again. And Lisa, looking forward to today. We're going to talk a little bit about overdue health checkups. I just this past weekend took my car in for service because the light came on the dashboard. Unfortunately, I guess we don't have those kind of lights on our dashboards. It probably wouldn't be a bad idea, though.
It wouldn't be a bad idea. You know, we have those kind of lights on our body that when they go off, and they usually go off with some kind of pain signal, we're pretty deep into our problem at that point. So, yeah, it would be great if we had lights, but we don't. So we do need to be proactive in how we approach the care and maintenance of our own vehicles, our temples.
You know, and it's I'm thinking, you know, it's maybe the routine things that get overlooked so often, right? It was easier when we were younger, right? We had the we went to the dentist and then we got our shots maybe once a year. And that was about it.
Yeah, you know, when you were a kid and you were in elementary school and junior high and high school, you had to go regularly to the doctor. You got your annual checkup. If you went away to camp, they wanted a camp checkup. You went to college, they give you a checkup before you go to college. But as with my college kids, that was the last checkup they had to have. And so when we get into adulthood, we kind of need to take over. And instead of being told by someone else, we need to tell ourselves, hey, it's time for our checkup. And the reason I wrote this Monday morning health tip was because over and over again, Neil, I'm evaluating a patient, and I'm a real holistic approach. And so I always ask them, tell me, when was the last time you had a full panel blood work done and were at your doctor's, other than being sick? And I would say over half of my patients cannot recount when they last went. It's over a year. They don't know. Maybe it's 3 years. And so there's just so many things that are happening in our bodies that we're unaware of, that the earlier we catch something going awry, the better. And our blood work is this beautiful panel. Just like when you brought your car in, they're going to connect it to a computer, and it's going to come up with these readings, and it's going to tell you what's off, what's not firing right. And our blood work does that for us, as well as, of course, tests that your doctor's going to run during your general checkup. So that's a really important visit.
Well, so let's talk about the kinds of things that we should be getting checked. I mean, I guess it probably shouldn't go without saying, but I mean, we do see our dentists and those things, but there are others that should be in the mix. Let's talk about those.
Yeah, you know, first of all, a lot of times when people go to see, say, a chiropractor regularly, they'd say, well, he's a doctor, she's a doctor, and so I do go see them, but they're not medical doctors, and so that doesn't count. So we do need to see our primary care physician. For ladies, as we get older, you know, when it's time to start seeing the gynecologist, when you're pregnant, of course, you're running to the obstetrician, part of that practice. When you reach about 40 as a woman, that's when you're starting to have your mammograms done. And those are annual tests that are done. You're also looking to go as men and women at about the age of 50. You need to have that colonoscopy done, that baseline colonoscopy. And people really shy away from that because of the whole prep that has to happen the day before, the cleaning of the colon. And but that is such a critical thing. I've just met so many people who have stage 4 colon cancer discovered in their 60s, and it's been brewing in their body, but they never bothered to get that colonoscopy. So that's really, really important. While you have a precancerous polyp that can be easily removed, as opposed to having it to have part of your colon taken out because of cancer. So the earlier the better with those things, Neil. And then we need to go to the dentist. You know, people also say, well, I don't go because it's an added expense, and I don't think I have any problems with my teeth. But if you're having bleeding while you're brushing, you have some inflamed gingivitis or problems in your gum, that has been correlated to heart disease. So if it is not taken care of and you have really bad gum disease, you're actually affecting your cardiac health. So there's a lot of different things that we need to be keeping track of.
Probably, you know, eye doctor as well, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. An ophthalmologist is a good, you know, if you're having trouble with your vision or you're having headaches, certainly you want to go get that checked out. But I would say by the age of 50, it's good to have a baseline because we can have problems like macular degeneration or glaucoma or issues that start really subtly and we don't know that they're there. But they can see them because they're peering deep into our eyes. And so it is important that we get those baselines. Once someone gives you a baseline, they said, you're all clear, they'll tell you, don't come back for 5 years or don't come back for 10 years. So I'd rather hear that than just not know and drift off until the point when, like, that blinking red light comes on in my body and I know there's a major problem happening.
And, of course, I mean, we hear stories all the time about, well, fortunately they caught it early, whatever it is. And, you know, wonderful that is to be able to say, yeah, you know, that's just, you know, God's grace and a little bit of discipline and planning on our part, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, another thing that is easy to catch early for men is prostate cancer. So prostate cancer doesn't become recognized by you until it is really, your prostate is really obstructing something. And so just your prostate exam, about 50 years old going in, not only checking your prostate, but also checking your testosterone levels. Because not only does that, as men grow older, you tend to lose levels or your levels of testosterone lower, but it increases your risk of muscle injury. It increases hair loss. It increases vigor and clarity of thought. All of those things could be simply avoided if you just knew, oh, okay, I need a little bit of a testosterone supplement. So why not live strong and well? You know, it just takes a little bit of those maintenance checkups.
Which is, of course, what Lisa Marone has been speaking about and writing about and working toward for years. Physical therapist, professor, author, and speaker, encouraging us to get healthy for heaven's sake, titled one of her great books out not too long ago. And so, Lisa, you know, some of these things we don't do regularly, we should, but maybe it's, you know, if the doctor says don't come back for a couple of years, then we kind of lose track. So is there a good way to kind of keep track of those things?
Yeah, I came up with a way for myself, Neil, that I just have just been sharing with my patients and my readers. I took a very simple approach to it. I grabbed myself an index card, and I wrote down the list of all of the specialists, the doctors that I go to, my primary care physician, my gynecologist, my ophthalmologist, and what have you, my dentist. And then I put their names next to it, and then I put their telephone numbers right on that index card. And then in the last column, in pencil, I wrote in when was the last time I had scheduled my appointment with them. Now, if you don't remember that, you can just put a quick call into that physician's office or dentist's office, and they'll let you know when you were there. And if it's been over a year and it's an annual visit, then you're on the phone already with them. You can schedule that appointment. But then I just tack that on the inside of one of my kitchen cabinet doors, because every time I open that, I see that, and I'm, oh, okay, that appointment's coming due. And so that's a way that, for me, I was able to organize and keep track of my own visits, and then, you know, multiply that by the number of people in your family. If you happen to be a mom and you've got a number of kids and you have to coordinate their visits or schedule their visits each year. So it's just a great way to keep track. So when I go to that doctor, I erase my last appointment and I put in my new appointment, and it's just a way to keep that right in front of my eyes so I don't miss any of my important appointments.
It doesn't have to be complicated. In fact, maybe the simpler is better. In this case, you could find, by the way, Lisa's Monday Morning Health Tip. You could look for her column on overdue for your health checkup, and you find a little information about that actually online, lisamarone.com. Lisa, before we go, is there anything, when we have a checkup, are there some general rules maybe for going to the doctor that we should have ready to talk about, or maybe even question, we think, well, I don't have to go unless there's been a serious injury or something. Talk about both those areas.
Yeah, I would think one of the things that I find that is best brought up by the patient, when you're going in, your doctor, of course, is going to take all of your normal, they're going to take your weight and your height and your blood pressure and your pulse. But sometimes doctors, when they're giving you a script for your blood work, if you are not or have not had problems with diabetes or prediabetes, they often will not ask to have an A1C test done. It's usually a test that doctors historically use just for diabetic patients. But if you bring that up to your doctor and say, hey, I'd like to know if I'm insulin resistant at all, can I have that test done? A lot of them will just say, sure, and they'll put that on. And that test can give you a clearer view up to like 3, 4, 7 years before you become diabetic. You can begin to know whether or not your blood sugars are starting to get out of your control and your body's not functioning properly. So that A1C test, my doctor automatically puts that down on my script, not because I've asked, but because she does that. But I would say that's only about 50-50 in terms of the physicians out there, because it's not standard American Medical Association practice yet. But it is quickly becoming that because of our diabetic epidemic.
Sure. And, if we have a cut or a fall, it doesn't hurt to get checked, right?
Absolutely. And especially if you've gotten a fall that you struck in your head, you might have lost a little bit of consciousness, or you're having some headaches or dizziness. A lot of times we treat head injuries very lightly, and we just want to brush it off and go lay down. But it is good to get that checked out by a physician. And that would be a walk-in emergency visit,
sure,
if you've just injured your head.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, hopefully we're going to use our heads and make our appointments. In fact, Ted and I are going to be making calls this afternoon, Lisa. Just wanted you to know.
All right. I'm checking back with you guys.
I know you will. That's the trouble. So we're going to do it. Lisa Marone, physical therapist, professor, author, speaker, Get Healthy for Heaven's Sake is the title of one of her great books, which she's written about headaches and migraines and overeating and sleeping well and diabetes, all those things. Sign up for her Monday Morning Health Tip as well on the website, lisamarone.com. Lisa, great to visit with you. Thanks for your good insight.
Always a pleasure.
Do you ever feel isolated and alone? Well, going through life in community is very important. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas, and Anne White speaks from her experience.
I knew what God's Word said about two are better than one. We're to encourage one another, pray with one another, lift one another up. But I had no clue how coming out of isolation was going to change my life. And so I encourage everyone to find safe people in your life that you can tell everything to.
So why not pray and ask God who that might be?
It may be someone you already know. It may be someone that you're going to get to know that God's going to bring into your life. But coming out of isolation brings so much freedom. You just have no clue until you do it.
You know, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love. You're not alone. Do you want to hear more encouraging stories? Go to MakingYourLifeCount.com.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today on Connecting Faith. It was great to talk about friendship. We had Christine Hoover on, author of Messy, Beautiful Friendship. Of course, Lisa Marone on as well, talking about, well, I have a list of things that I'm going to have to do now. So, yes, she's encouraging me to get healthy, for heaven's sake. You can go to our website if you want to hear a complete podcast of any of those at myfaithradio.com. Just click on Connecting Faith. You have just a wealth of podcasts available for you there. And we also just want to thank you again for listening to Connect Faith, for participating in Share as we head into our week this week. Just be blessed and continue to support others who are supporting us in Faith Radio. We're so grateful for that. And as we head into tomorrow, we have Gary Thomas on. We're going to talk about sacred parenting, how raising children shapes our souls.
Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. And you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.